Minneapolis and on the web at kfai.org.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
You are listening to Fresh Air Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and 106.7 in St. Paul. This is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman.
This program will inspire you, inform you, feed you healthy recipes, engage you politically, enlighten you spiritually. When was the last time you sat down to have a heart-to-heart with yourself? Have you really examined your heart lately? Are you harboring childhood wounds? Are you still nursing a broken heart? Are you frightened, angry, guilty, or ashamed? Is there someone you need to apologize to? Who have you forgiven lately? If God were to speak through your heart today, what would you hear? In the everyday quest to get through life, we sometimes forget we really do have all we need. It's tucked away safely inside of us. It contributes to our thoughts and motivates our actions. If we clear it out, it will actually speak to us and tell us exactly what to do. When was the last time you had a heart-to-heart with yourself? Affirmation. I am balanced in life. That comes from the book Acts of Faith, Daily Meditations. Iyanla Van Sant. Good evening. You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, and we're streaming online at kfai.org. And this is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman, and I'm Kinshasha. And we're going to be talking about our hormones with Dr. Alicia Staton, her book Hormone Harmony, How to Balance Insulin, Cortisol, Thyroid, Estrogen, Progesterone, and Testosterone to Live Your Best Life. How did the book Hormone Harmony come about?
I have been practicing medicine, really focusing on hormone and nutrition balance only for the past probably 5 or 6 years. And hormone harmony is really what I've been saying to my patients during their visits for the past 5 or 6 years. And so I'm telling them how to eat, how to manage their stress, how to live their lives and avoid toxins. And I was saying it so often, I thought, you know, I really should write all this down and let them read it. That way they have the education and our conversations can be that much deeper.
The hormones that you have on the front, between you go from insulin to testosterone. Are those all of the hormones that we have in our body?
No, they're definitely not all of the hormones we have in our body. We have a number of other hormones. These are the ones that I think are very, very important to focus on. And if we can have these particular hormones in balance, it helps to really enhance the balance of the other hormones as well.
Insulin. Insulin is one of the biggest issues, I think, in this society. When I think about insulin and there being so much sugar in the blood, I think I can't even get out of the hardware store without being bombarded with sugar. Certainly, either direct sugar products or foods that convert right into sugar are a mainstay in the society.
I believe that that is a very true statement. I think that our society has gotten very accustomed to sugar and sweets, and not just the sweets, but even the breads, the pastas, all those things break down into simpler sugars. And insulin is a very, very important hormone in regulating our sugar. And what's been happening in our country, especially over probably the past 30 years or so, is as our diet has shifted more towards processed foods, pastas, bagels, breads, those kinds of things, plus the sweets and sodas, we have had put more of a burden on our insulin system, and we need more and more and more insulin to keep our blood sugar in a normal range. And eventually our body uses so much of this insulin and our body's so overwhelmed by it that we stop listening to it. Then we develop something called insulin resistance, where our body's not listening. It's kind of resisting the insulin that we have. Start putting on more belly fat, and we start becoming less and less healthy until we get to the point where we may develop diabetes.
What can we do to turn that around?
There's a number of ways to turn the insulin issue around. The first thing that I tell my patients is you want to keep your blood sugar stable. So you want to eat a diet that has lean proteins like chicken, fish, turkey, beans, nuts, those kinds of proteins, and complex carbohydrates like vegetables and high-fiber fruits like apples, berries, and pears. So if you're eating a small meal every 2 to 3 hours, that, you know, things like apples and almond butter or vegetables and hummus or a salad with some protein on it, all of those things are going to maintain a steady blood sugar so we don't have as much of a demand for our insulin hormone.
A lot of people are doing various kinds of cleanses, whether it be a juice fast, whether it be a water fast or whatever. I'm wondering, how does that affect the insulin levels and how does that affect our hormones overall?
Well, the cleanses are a very interesting question. And one of the things that happens with our insulin levels, like I said, being too high and us becoming insulin resistant, is we tend to encourage the production of fat. We get to a point where when we take in sugar, instead of storing it as sugar, we automatically turn it into fat. The other thing that affects our fat storage is toxins. And we have toxins really all over in the environment. If you think of those plastic water bottles we're drinking out of, there's something called bisphenol A or BPA. BPA also lines the cans that we keep our food in. So things like tomato products, juices, sodas, you have exposure to BPA that way. There's a number of different toxins. And the key with that is our toxins, once they enter our body, need to be kind of kept out of the way from the rest of our body. And so we tend to store them in fat. So what ends up happening is that if you can, some of these detoxes that people talk about, start helping our body to mobilize or get rid of the toxins, and it is one of the first ways then you can start releasing some of the fat, because then you don't need the fat around to kind of wall off the toxins.
In case you just tuned in, we're talking with Dr. Alicia Stant about her new book, Hormone Harmony. I was sharing some of those very things about the BPAs and different ways that people could be toxic. Because I think what I talked about specifically, I shared your piece on BPAs, on fragrance, on parabens and antibacterial products. In the parabens, you say that it is not always possible to know if there's parabens in the product. And in fragrances, they're high-kept secrets. And so I got phone calls right away. Well, how am I supposed to know what to use and what not to use? And how can I stay away from those pitfalls?
What I tell people when they're not sure what to use is I tell them to look for organic products, and especially, you know, fragrances. It's really hard because you want your house to smell nice. You want all these things to smell good. And what I suggest for the house as far as fragrances are concerned are organic essential oils. So, you know, if you get on the Internet and even just Google organic essential oils, there's a number of great companies that come up. And then what you can do is you can even, you know, have some water boiling on the stove and just put some essential oil into that and, you know, whatever scent that you want. And you really, you know, fill up the house. It smells wonderful. There are some really amazing beeswax and soy organic candles that are out there. As far as personal fragrances, I think that there are companies that are coming out with more natural or organic scents as well. And you're right, because what happens is sometimes those things are just listed as fragrance or scent or something like that on the label, so you don't know that it's necessarily a paraben.
What are the effects of BPAs in our system? You say that the BPAs can mimic estrogen in the body. What does that mean exactly?
What's interesting with the BPAs and a number of the different toxins is they call them hormone disruptors or endocrine disruptors, and they can mimic various hormones, so they can act in our body like estrogen. So we may start acting like we have a little bit more estrogen than we actually do. So, you know, women may get breast tenderness or heavier bleeding, irregular cycles, those kinds of things. But the other places it affects are men. Our men, if they have too much estrogen, it almost counteracts the effects of testosterone. They may put on weight. They may develop breasts. They're showing there's more and more indication that this is also affecting our children. And it affects our children when we're pregnant with them. If we have high levels of bisphenol A in our system when we're pregnant, it does cross the placenta and it shows up in the babies. They're looking at more long-term studies, but there are some studies that are showing that our children may be more susceptible to weight gain or obesity, that there may be some issues with hormone balance in the kids as they grow up. So it's something that we really need to look very closely at.
So unless a plastic bottle specifically says BPA-free, know that it has BPAs in it.
Right, and there are some plastic bottles that leach less BPA than others. Essentially, plastic bottles that have the numbers 2, 4, or 5 tend to leach BPA less or tend to have, you know, a really limited amount of leaching. Containers that are marked 3, 6, and 7 may leach more, and so you really want to not have your food in any of those containers. You definitely don't want to ever microwave in any plastic containers. You want to go with the ceramic or glass microwave safe dishes for that. And water bottles, the standard water bottles that most of us use, have a little 1 in that triangle. And those are essentially single-use only bottles. Those bottles are okay for one use, but you don't want to keep refilling them over and over again because eventually those will start leaching. Probably your safest bet is to be drinking out of the BPA-free bottles. They have, I know Nalgene is one company that makes BPA-free bottles. There are a number of them out there, and they'll specifically say BPA-free. And then you can just filter your own water and drink out of one of those bottles, and you're in good shape.
We're talking about hormone therapy on Health Notes, Dr. Alicia Statton. And talk to us, Dr. Statton, about cortisol. What is cortisol, and how does it affect our bodies?
Cortisol is a very, very important hormone for us. It really is, in the short-term, life-saving. It's our fight-or-flight hormone and the one that allows us to respond to great stresses. So in an emergency, your cortisol level goes up. And if you think about all the things that happen in your body in an emergency, you think about the fact that your eyesight gets more acute, your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure goes up, you pour all kinds of sugar into your blood so that your muscles have energy to use. And so there's all kinds of things that are happening in your system. In the short term, to get yourself out of an emergency, that's very, very good. What happens in our society all too often right now is that we're really under a constant level of stress. And I tell my patients that, you know, think about cortisol, your fight or flight hormone, as like back in the caveman days, if a saber-toothed tiger jumped out at you, what did you have to do? You had to run away. So all these things kicked in, so you ran away, and you either ran away and escaped, and so it was a short-lived effect, or you were eaten, and so you didn't need your effect anymore. Mm. And normally, once you escaped, things calmed down, your cortisol level went back down to normal, and everything was good. Right now in our society, we actually generate the same response whether we're being attacked by a saber-toothed tiger or our taxes are late or the person ahead of us won't make the left-hand turn even though their blinker's been on for the past half hour, you know, or all the other things that keep coming to mind. And the interesting thing is you can create that scenario in your head without ever having it actually happen. I will take my patients and tell them to stand up and close their eyes and pretend that they're on a ledge standing outside the Empire State Building. And they're safely in my office, but you can see them get all nervous and they get all jittery and some of them have to open their eyes. And what they did was they generated a huge cortisol response even though they were standing still in the office. The issue with cortisol is when you keep having that high, constant response, you have a long time of high blood sugar, you get, you know, long high blood pressure, and you really start adding belly fat and creating a scenario where your body gets very, very unhealthy with the long-term high cortisol.
What can we do to turn that around?
Well, the interesting thing, many of the patients that I see, by the time I see them, they've had such a long-term effect, such a long-term drain on their cortisol levels that their adrenal glands, which is what makes cortisol, can't actually meet that demand anymore. And they often come in with something called adrenal fatigue, where they're not able to meet their cortisol demand, so they are just exhausted. They hit the snooze 5 or 6 times. They can't concentrate on what they're doing. They go to the refrigerator, can't remember why they went to the refrigerator. They, you know, they're moody. They have all these issues. And a lot of times they're just told that they're getting old or it's just, you know, don't worry about it and that your lab tests are okay. And then we talk about cortisol. We talk about their adrenals. So the things that you can do to help your adrenals, first of all, if you're in a state where, you know, you have a high drive and you're always agitated and jittery and you can't seem to calm down, one of the best things you can actually do is deep breathing. And everyone kind of rolls their eyes and says, oh, yeah, sure, whatever. But the fact of the matter is if you can take even 5 slow, deep breaths, counting in for 5 and blowing out for 5, if you can do 5 of those in a row, you're already starting to lower your cortisol level. And I'll find that when I'm very stressed or I have something going on that I have to deal with, I'll stop and I will deep breathe. And my family already knows that, you know, if I'm in traffic or something's happening and I start deep breathing, then they know that I'm getting stressed. But that's going to lower your cortisol. Things that you can do in, like, everyday life to keep your cortisol stable. First thing is eating, like I said. If you maintain a stable insulin and blood sugar level, you're going to maintain a stable cortisol level. The deep breathing and stress management. Other things I tell my patients is to look at your sources of stress. Find out what's happening in your life that's creating it. And that's not always easy. It may not be the obvious things. If you have to really sit with it and see where are the stressors concerned, who are the people, what are the events, what are the things I dread, and then see where you can set boundaries, because that's going to be important in moving through some of the stress. And then various nutrients we talk about are your B vitamins, your C vitamins, vitamin D. Those are all very important in helping to stabilize the adrenal glands as well.
Programming on KFAI is supported in part by Health Partners. Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The plan includes personal support, coverage for medical, prescription drugs and dental, plus many extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment in Health Partners depends on contract renewal. More information at healthpartners.com/oneplan.
Minneapolis becomes Mardi Graspolis when the Southside Aces present A Night in New Orleans at the Dakota, Tuesday, May 13th. The Southside Aces are back with their latest release, Minneapolis Bump, 15 original songs inspired by the jazz age. Drawing from jazz greats like Jelly Roll Morton, King Oliver, Louis Armstrong, and Duke Ellington, the Southside Aces bring the classic New Orleans speakeasy sound to the modern age. And you don't even need the password. Tickets for the Southside Aces can be found at the Dakota's website. Visit dakotacooks.com for more details.
We're talking about the book Hormone Harmony, how to balance insulin, cortisol, thyroid, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone to live your best life. We're talking with Dr. Alice Staton. Where does water come into this conversation?
Water is a very critical aspect as well. And of course, you want it to be clean, filtered water. But I tell my patients, I really want them to be drinking, you know, the standard is 8 glasses of water a day. And I tell them to try and stick with at least 6 to 8 glasses a day, because you want to keep your body filtered. You want to keep your kidneys working well. It's going to reduce your toxin exposure. It really, it's interesting, a lot of people overeat because they're actually thirsty. They mistake thirst for hunger, and they eat when if they just go get a glass of water, they will end up, you know, feeling better and not need to eat. You know, I really focus with my patients on eventually eliminating all sugary beverages and sodas and things like that. Sometimes in the very first visit, I can't knock out too many things at once because they get too overwhelmed. But ultimately, I would like my patients, and at this point, all I drink is water, iced herbal tea or hot herbal teas, or coffee in the morning, a black coffee, but really focusing on getting the fluids in and keeping your body well hydrated is important.
I want to kind of recap the things that you've said so far. You initially said, as it relates to eating, that it's important to eat every few hours, like every 2 to 3 hours. I think you said small meals and 6 to 8 glasses of water. You said that the importance of eating so regularly is what? Why 4 or 5 meals versus the 3 meals that we've all been raised with?
If you're eating, you know, 5 or 6 smaller meals in a day, what that does is if you're eating 3 meals a day, what's going to happen is you're going to have, it's a bigger meal, so you're going to get a bigger spike in your blood sugar. And then as you get closer to like hour 4 or so without any food, your blood sugar really dips down very low. And your body sees that as a stress because your brain needs glucose, actually it needs blood sugar to function. So if your blood sugar dips down too low, then your body kicks in cortisol because they see it as a stress to help raise the blood sugar. And then what ends up happening is your blood sugar shoots up a little bit too high, so then insulin has to come back in. You kind of get, if you imagine almost a sawtooth, spiky pattern of high blood sugar, low blood sugar, high blood sugar, low blood sugar. If you're eating every 2 to 3 hours and there's smaller meals, your blood sugar doesn't get as high. And then before it can really get too low, you're having another small meal again. And so it's a much more stable pattern. So you're not calling on too much insulin and you're not calling on too much cortisol. It just stays nice and stable.
Any suggestions on strategies from moving to one large meal to, or 1 or 2, 3 large meals to several small meals? I think that the idea of several small meals is good for folks, but once they sit down to eat, they don't feel fulfilled. I mean, that sense of being full is so important to them, and so a small meal doesn't get it.
And that's a very good point that, you know, we really have gotten accustomed to having, you know, a great big meal. We have the grand slam breakfast and this and that. And so I think that it does become a process. And what I will tell people is to, you know, start by adding some of those snacks. And so you may, you know, it may not start out with being small meals right off the bat, but if you add some little snacks in, then what ends up happening is even by lunch, you may not be as hungry as you were. Think about it. If you have, you know, a breakfast at 7 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock in the morning, even if it's your grand slam, as you're getting towards, you know, noon, 12:30, you're starving. You're so hungry. So then the next step is you have this great big lunch, and then at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you want to put your head on your desk and fall asleep. If you eventually can train yourself to do a smaller breakfast and make sure you're having protein in. I love eggs. I love those kinds of things for breakfast. Have a little something at 10 o'clock in the morning, and at that point, you could do yogurt or cottage cheese and vegetables or fruits, apples and almond butter, you know, granola bars, almonds, you know, things along those lines. By noon, you're hungry, you're ready for lunch, but you're not ravenous. And so then you can have a little bit of a smaller meal. And then at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you have another, you know, small something, another handful of almonds, an apple, grapes, something along those lines, so that by dinner, again, you're not walking in the house and, you know, all bets are off on as far as what's going to go into your mouth. You can actually think about what you're eating and have a sensible meal. So, but it takes practice. I mean, you have to kind of get used to eating that way.
Thank you.
Hormone harmony is what we're talking about. Dr. Alicia Staton. Dr. Staton, talk to us about the thyroid.
The thyroid is actually one of my favorite hormones. I think it's an overlooked hormone in that it focuses on our metabolism, our energy, but also it's very important for our concentration, our ability to think. You know, it also ends up being important for our moods, too, because if you're exhausted, then, you know, you really can't be in a good mood. What's interesting about thyroid disease right now is that some of the studies are showing that up to like 1 in 7 Americans has some thyroid disease. You know, a lot of the ways that it's looked at or studied is by looking at one blood test called TSH, or thyroid stimulating hormone. And that's really an indirect way of looking at your thyroid. That's kind of how hard your brain is yelling at your thyroid. Many doctors don't look at actually how much thyroid hormone is in the blood, which is what I do, because I find that it's very, very important for my patients to make sure they have adequate energy. If your thyroid is low, if it's not working as well as it could be working, some of the symptoms are weight gain, dry skin, constipation, fatigue, foggy thinking, and actually there are a number of thyroid receptors on the heart, so there may be heart failure or things along those lines in very severe issues or very severe cases. And I will have patients come in that have those symptoms, but they say, well, you know, my doctor did my testing and said my hormones, my thyroid is fine. But they may have only looked at that one particular thing, the TSH, and not looked at the other hormone areas. And so that's one of the things I focus on.
And I've heard that another symptom of thyroid imbalance is that your eyebrows begin to lose hair?
Yes, that actually hair loss in general is a very key symptom of thyroid imbalance. And thank you for reminding me. So one of the ways that you can notice it on somebody is if they're the lateral third. So if their outer eyebrows are very, very thinned out, then that is a pretty good sign that they have very low thyroid. But also if they suddenly start losing a lot of the hair on their head, that is another indicator of possible thyroid issues. And we talked about cortisol a little while ago. The adrenal gland and the thyroid gland are very closely tied together. So if you have adrenal fatigue, a lot of times your thyroid will also not be working as well. So those are very closely tied together. So, you know, it's important that if people have a lot of fatigue and, you know, they're found to have thyroid disease, that you make sure you do the things that are going to support your adrenals as well, because a lot of times there's going to be adrenal fatigue as well.
Are there things that people can do dietarily to help put their thyroid back in balance, or is medication necessary? And if it is, are there any herbal solutions to correcting the thyroid?
As far as your diet is concerned with thyroid, key things I would look at are making sure you're getting enough iodine. They actually used to put iodine in the salt, and everyone was getting enough iodine because they actually used their salt shakers. If you don't use a lot of salt and you have thyroid issues, you may look at doing a low-dose iodine supplement. You can also look at selenium. Selenium is a very important nutrient for converting your inactive hormone T4 to your more active hormone T3. If you are deficient in selenium, and you know, if you have thyroid issues, I recommend a lot of my patients use a selenium because that will help out with that. Other things that are important are vitamin A. If you are known to have thyroid disease or suspect that you have thyroid disease, especially an autoimmune thyroid disease or something called Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which your body actually makes antibodies against your thyroid, what's interesting is there's a very strong correlation between a gluten sensitivity, which is a sensitivity to wheat, rye, and barley, and autoimmune thyroid disease. So if you have that, if you have thyroid issues, looking at doing a gluten-free diet may really help out a lot. I personally have had thyroid disease since I was 20, and they had a very hard time really regulating it, and what made mine work much, much better was going on a gluten-free diet. So that's a really good dietary step that you can take if you think you have thyroid disease.
We're talking about our hormones on Health Notes. We're talking with Dr. Alicia Staton, one of this country's foremost bioidentical hormone experts as well as anti-aging. Why do our hormones affect the way we age?
There are some very interesting theories about aging, and one of the theories is called the hormone theory. It talks about the fact that as our hormones decline, we age. And then there's also the, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg? And the thought process is, well, do we age because our hormones decline, or is it the other way around? But our hormones really are the messengers in our body. So it allows, you know, all the cells to really talk to each other and to get information back and forth. And so if you have decline in our hormones that really help us grow, such as estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, those are kind of our building up hormones, then you're not going to be able to get those messages the right way. You're not going to build your lean muscle mass, and, you know, you're not going to be in the optimal balance.
The thing that's so interesting to me, as I learn more about the whole issue of diet and our hormones and the things that we need to do to keep ourselves well, it's a really interesting thing that, seeing that there are so many people who are aging rapidly at the same time, yet the diets aren't changing. It's like a lot of old folks are eating the same way that they did when they were 20. And so what comes to my mind, honestly, Dr. Statton, is like sporting events with all of the beers and the brats and the hot dogs and the nachos and all of those kind of non-foods that are promoted at those kinds of events, or when you see any television commercial and you see a slice of pizza and the cheese is sliding all the way up in the air, and how it triggers those places in the brain. Can you say anything about that? I don't even know what I want to say about that, except for that it's just one of those kinds of things that makes me go, doesn't that contribute to everything that we've been talking about?
I think that what you just described definitely contributes to what we've been talking about. You know, in the reality of you are what you eat, back in the day of Hippocrates, 4,000 years ago, he said, let your food be your medicine. The reality is whatever we're putting in our mouth is a fuel. That's the only fuel our body has to go on. So, you know, we talk about things like omega-3 fatty acids and the healthy fats. That works, you know, so salmon and mackerel, if you like that, and the healthy fats, those work to maintain our cell membranes, which is essentially what surrounds every single cell in our body. These omega-3 fatty acids allow us to have, like, kind of looser, more flowing membranes. And the more our membranes flow, the more things that can get in and out of them, the better our cells communicate, the better our hormones work. All those things make a difference. If we're doing more of the animal fats and the omega-6 fatty acids, then what happens there, the grains, those kinds of things tend to give us stiffer membranes, and we may be more inclined to have inflammation and irritation. So that's one example of how our diet can affect things.
Programming on KFAI is supported in part by Health Partners. Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The plan includes personal support, coverage for medical, prescription drugs and dental, plus many extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment and Health Partners depends on contract renewal. More information at healthpartners.com/oneplan.
We're talking about the book Hormone Harmony, How to Balance Insulin, Cortisol, Thyroid, Estrogen, Progesterone, and Testosterone to Live Your Best Life. We're talking with Dr. Alice Statton.
We talked about sugar and how it affects insulin. And what's interesting is if you look at how the old folks ate, you know, even 50 years ago, everyone looks and says, well, they ate fat and they ate, you know, they had their meat, potatoes, and vegetables, but they ate whole foods. They had a real potato, you know, real vegetables, and real meat. They did things in moderation, and they didn't have a lot of the processed food. They didn't have the fast food. they didn't have a lot of the different things that we've been using as steady staples in our diet, you know, even for the past 30 or 40 years. And so it's really changed the physiology of the entire population that we have.
We're talking about our hormones on Health Notes. I'm so intrigued by the entire conversation when it comes to estrogen and progesterone. We generally don't talk about it until we're talking about perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause. Talk to us about estrogen and progesterone.
Sure. The very interesting thing about estrogen and progesterone is when people talk about hormones and hormone therapy, those are the two hormones that we think of. And everyone thinks, okay, it's an issue for the perimenopausal woman, so it's not even going to be a problem for me until I'm in my late 40s, so I don't need to think about it. But all the hormones that we've talked about so far, the insulin, the cortisol, thyroid, it's all a balance. And the really interesting thing about hormones like cortisol or stress hormone is their building block is progesterone. Progesterone is also the building block for estrogen and testosterone. So I tell my patients that another way that stress is really creating imbalance for them is that the higher their cortisol demand is, the more they're taking all their progesterone and diverting it to make cortisol instead of making estrogen and testosterone. So that women that have a high stress situation or have insulin resistance are going to enter the perimenopause really behind the eight ball, and they're going to be much more symptomatic. When I have patients that are coming into me with hormone complaints, such as weight gain, hot flashes, mood swings, low libido, hair loss, dry skin, digestive issues, all those different kinds of things, we look at their hormone levels, and invariably, they're going to have, you know, inadequate progesterone or lower progesterone. And then we look to try and balance that with the amount of estrogen that they have. Sometimes they also have low estrogen as well, but a lot of times it's looking at balancing the estrogen that they have with progesterone to help balance their symptoms.
Is it possible through diet to put those things in balance through diet, exercise, and meditation, for example, to put those things in balance? Or is it a given that we have to go to the doctor and increase whatever is low?
I do believe that it's possible to keep the hormones in balance through, you know, diet and meditation and exercise and limiting exposure to toxins and those kinds of things. You know, if you look at things throughout history, there have always been the wise women that kind of, you know, made it through everything and ended up with their low level of steady-state hormones at the end of their lives, and they were fine. And I think that one of the reasons that we're having so much trouble now is that, you know, we aren't balanced when we're at a point where we're going to be entering the perimenopause, that, you know, we're very stressed, we're insulin resistant, you know, the hormones are all out of whack even in our 30s, so that by the time we're in our mid-40s, we're a disaster. And then if we can start thinking about these things in our 20s and 30s, then we're going to be more likely to coast into it. And I, you know, I don't guarantee that people will need, you know, no assistance or they're not going to need something. But, you know, if you think about the, you know, Asian populations that were, you know, eating a balanced diet and were meditating and were doing Tai Chi and doing all those things, I think a lot of those women kind of sailed through menopause and went from cycling to just a low-level steady state of hormones, and they did well. And that's what I really try and encourage in my patients.
You know, as we're talking about this change in our lives, we always talk about women. And so perimenopause and menopause is a very obvious sign for women. But don't men also go through a change of life?
I actually think that men are so underserved in this arena right this very second. And that's one of my really huge passions is, first of all, letting the guys know that, you know, they may have an issue. Secondly, you know, letting them know what it is and what are the things that they can do. Because remember I said that cortisol uses progesterone as a building block, but that progesterone is also a building block for estrogen and testosterone. And a lot of our guys right now, between the diets that they're eating and the stress levels that they're under, are really having issues maintaining their level of testosterone. As a matter of fact, there was a recent study that just showed that 1 in 5 men under the age of 40 has low testosterone. And the symptoms of low testosterone are depression, weight gain. You know, really they feel like they lose their edge. They just aren't the same guy they used to be. There may be erectile dysfunction, a number of things like that. And as a society, we're so willing to give them the little blue pill and antidepressants. And nobody is looking at what their hormone status is and what can be done to help them. And if you look at how important testosterone is in the overall health of men, connected to their hearts, their brains, you know, all aspects of their bodies, men with low testosterone have higher risk of heart attack, higher risk of Alzheimer's, higher risk of osteoporosis, higher risk of diabetes. So you can start seeing this almost a domino effect of problems for men if they don't recognize that they have low testosterone.
So what is the effect of low testosterone in women?
The effect of low testosterone in women is affected to libido, so they may not be in the mood. Bone mass, so they may be more at risk for osteoporosis. Lean muscle mass, an overall sense of well-being. Women need a much smaller dose of testosterone. I usually dose them at about 1/20th of what I dose the men. But they have low testosterone, they know it, they can tell.
I'm going to backtrack for a second, Dr. Stanton. You talked eloquently about the essential fatty acids earlier and how essential it is to our health. And what came to mind is there are so many people in this society who have lost their gallbladders. How does that affect their ability to assimilate the essential fatty acids?
That's a very good question. In looking at issues as far as gallbladder is concerned, gallbladder secretes bile, and bile is what helps us break down our fats. I don't know the exact data on, you know, what the absorption of fats in people that have had, you know, gallbladders removed is, but I can certainly surmise that it would make a large difference. And since we have so many people that get their gallbladders removed, it's really important to supplement with some extra omega-3s and some extra fatty acids. And I usually recommend that my patients are on at least 2,000 milligrams of something that contains EPA and DHA, and those are the two major kinds of essential fatty acids that I like. Because you're right, with the gallbladders coming out and people not having as much bile, they really can't break down and absorb the fats as they could before.
I know that you are one of the country's leading experts on bioidentical hormones. Who do you recommend those hormones for?
I recommend bioidentical hormones for men or women, and I have patients that are between the ages of, you know, their mid-20s through their 70s, who really are showing deficiency in hormones, you know, are symptomatic with it, and who are willing to also work as far as diet, stress management, exercise, those kinds of things. I work with my patients as a partner with them and tell them they really have to do some things because it's not all about, you know, just taking a hormone and having everything be all better.
You said that your body logic group is around the country. Is there a place that people can go to find out if they can find one of your doctors in their area?
Certainly. The website is bodylogicmd.com. So it's BODYLOGIC.com. And there is one of my very favorite doctors on the planet actually is right in Minneapolis. So you guys have a great treasure there.
I'm hoping that probably one of the most interesting chapters that you had in the book talked about aging and muscle strength, muscle and bone deterioration. Could you talk to our listeners about exercise and the importance of exercise in this conversation about hormones and in the aging process itself?
Certainly. Exercise really is important in kind of slowing down the aging process. It's interesting, one of the ways that we really feel that as people become very elderly, they're at risk is developing what we call sarcopenia. And what that means is low muscle mass. I think that that's due to the aging process plus the loss of hormones. Things like testosterone and estrogen help you build that up, especially testosterone. People that have sarcopenia or this low muscle mass end up being at risk for fractures and injuries when they fall. They're just weaker and more frail in general. The combination of making sure that your, you know, the hormones are optimal, plus you have enough protein that you're taking in and the nutrients combined with exercise is going to be important. And where exercise comes in handy is that as you, especially if you're doing strength training, and you're right, there are definitely some exercises in the book and with pictures and everything, the strength training is going to allow you to use the muscle cells and use your muscles. And as you use them, you give them more impetus to build up. So as they build up and they get stronger with the help of, again, the nutrition and potentially hormones if you need them, that's going to strengthen the bones around them and it's going to make you stronger overall. One other interesting thing about increasing your lean muscle mass is that your muscle cells use a lot of your blood sugar. So if you have an issue with that insulin resistance where your body's not listening to the insulin anymore, if you're building new muscle cells and you're exercising, you have new cells that are going to listen to that insulin, and you're going to reduce insulin resistance and you're going to reduce diabetes. And so there's all kinds of reasons to exercise.
What about supplements? What do you recommend regarding supplements?
As far as supplements are concerned, my three key things that I think everybody should be taking are a good quality multivitamin, the fish oils that I talked about, and vitamin D. Especially in Minneapolis and where I am up in the Northeast, we really need our vitamin D, especially in the wintertime. As a matter of fact, if you're above the latitude of Atlanta, Georgia, which most of us are in this country, in the winter months, you cannot make enough vitamin D from the sun, so you have to supplement. It's real easy because I recommend 2,000 international units of vitamin D a day for my patients. And remember I said I recommend 2,000 milligrams of omega fish oils. So it's easy to remember. Just remember 2,000. And you've got the fish oils and the vitamin D and then your high-quality multivitamin.
And that's in the winter months. Do you change that amount in the summer months?
What I recommend is that patients have their vitamin D levels checked, because I have a significant number of patients that are on the 2,000 international units, and that's still not enough for them. I like to see vitamin D levels between 60 and 100. What's interesting is that they're showing that at those levels you actually have a reduction in the risk of cancer, of a number of different types of cancer, including breast cancer. Actually, everyone in my practice now has their vitamin D level checked, and I've seen levels as low as 6. Check the levels, and the minimum I have people on is 2,000 international units, and some people, if their levels are low, I have on as high as 10,000. So to make your answer your question in a very long-winded fashion, in the summer months, depending on what their levels are, we may drop the dosage down, but it depends on what they're doing.
Is a multivitamin important for health, for good health?
I believe a multivitamin is very important for good health, because even if you're eating a balanced diet, there are some studies even from as long ago as the 1930s that are showing that the soil is depleted. And especially when we're doing a lot of the you know, mega farming that we're doing, you may not be getting all the nutrients you should be getting even in a balanced diet. Vitamins are essentially what we call the cofactor. There's what makes different enzymes or different things in our bodies work. You know, things like trace minerals, your smaller vitamins and things that you need in smaller doses. I will often tell my patients that if you were, say, a General Motors, and it's a car factory, and you see all the parts for all the cars on the assembly line, and you have everything you need to make 1,000 cars, except you only have 2 steering wheels, how many cars are you going to make in the end? 2. And so the whole process is stopped up because you're low on steering wheels. And it's almost like with the vitamins. You can have everything you need of everything, except you might be very low on one particular vitamin or nutrient, and everything comes to a screeching halt. So I recommend that you have a multivitamin so you limit that from happening.
Is it important that our supplements be whole food supplements?
That's an interesting question, being a whole food supplement. I look for my supplements to make sure that they're pharmaceutical-grade supplements and that they have, you know, that you can really make sure that you can follow the ingredients all the way through so that they know that they're organically grown and that, you know exactly what you're getting. I know that there's one supplement company that advertises that they use whole food supplements, but what ends up happening is if you look at their label, they actually add some of the actual vitamin to it as well to bring the amounts up. So I focus more on, is it a very high quality pharmaceutical grade supplement, so I know exactly what I'm getting, and that's the real key.
So does pharmaceutical grade make it automatically the things that you just talked about?
Yes. So there are very good companies out there. There are companies like Metagenics, Orthomolecular, Biotics. There's a number of very good ones out there that really specialize in making sure that they know exactly where all their ingredients are coming from, and they do a very, very good job.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Online and archived at KFAI.org. It's where community grows.
I mean, this is not the kind of music that comes from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
No.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, around the world, KFAI.org.